This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Gas prices soared to an all-time high this week. Regular unleaded costs an average of $3.19 per gallon. And with the Memorial Day weekend and the summer travel season just around the corner, many people will hit the road for the beach, the mountains, for that family vacation to Niagara Falls, or the West Coast road trip with friends. Interestingly, an ABC News Washington Post poll finds that record gas prices have little or no effect on people's driving plans, but they certainly will affect your wallet. We all know that the type of car you drive can make a difference in gas mileage, but what about how you drive it? The car world is abuzz with special tricks and tips on how to save gas. Today, we're going to try to figure out which of these tricks actually work and which are nothing more than urban legends. So what secrets have you heard about better gas mileage, and do they work? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, we have a special prom edition of Ask Amy and an email challenge for you. What was the theme of your prom? Do you remember? You can send those along with your questions on how to tame your teen's dreams to talk@npr.org. But first, the road to better gas mileage. Joining us now is Amy Matinat. She's an automotive expert for AskPatty.com and author of the book, How to Buy a Great Used Car. She joins us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio in Montpelier. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much, Neil. Glad to be here.
And one of the things I noticed in your column on Ask Patty is the easiest way to save gas is to park your car. But you also note, let's get real, most of us need to use our cars.
Yes, and most of us love driving our cars.
So given that we're going to keep driving, and certainly that's what that news poll, the opinion poll found, what's the best way to save gas, do you think?
There's a lot of small things that you can do, very easy things, and they all add up, and they're going to save you a lot of money in the end. When driving down the highway, the best thing you can do is go the speed limit. For every 5 miles per hour that you go over 60 miles an hour, you're paying the equivalent of an extra 20 cents a gallon. And it also saves you money by not getting a speeding ticket.
That's true.
And,
this is the reason for the faster you go, the more drag you're building up?
Correct. It's the aerodynamic drag of your car.
Okay.
So if you have cruise control and you're on the highway, use it. It's going to help improve your fuel mileage, and it's also going to, you know, keep you under the speed limit without having to think about it, because cars these days, they drive so well. It's so easy to go over the speed limit. You just can't tell. So if you use your cruise control, you don't have to really think about it.
Mm-hmm. One thing about driving the speed limit is you're going to have an awful lot of angry drivers right behind you.
Well, just stay on the right side. You know, they've got the other side to pass you by. And what I always tell people is if you're on a secondary road and you do find that you're going on the speed limit and you do get a line behind you, just find a place to pull over and let them go.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, and I think everybody tells you this, stop driving like a maniac.
Yes. It's that push and pull of the car. You know, when you are accelerating fast, you're pushing on that gas pedal and pushing a lot of gas through the car, so you're eating up that gas, and then you have to, you know, slam on the brakes and you're eating up your brake pads, so you're spending money two ways, plus it's not really a safe way to drive.
So all of this, we'll have to find out more in more detail in just a moment, but it seems to be that the best device to save gas is yourself.
Correct. And it's, you know, in the long run, it's just easy. You can do it all by yourself. I'm always one of those people, you know, what can I do to make a difference? And it's nice to know that you can take some steps in your driving habits and save money on your gas.
We're talking with Amy Matinat of AskPatty.com. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. What's the best way to save gas? We have Brandon on the line. Brandon is calling us from Pennsylvania.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I actually heard, I was on a website a couple of months ago, and I heard that if you add acetone, which is nail polish remover, to your gas tank, you can improve mileage by up to 30% in some cases. I was wondering if that was a myth or if that's a fact or what.
Amy Battenat?
I would be very hesitant to add anything to your gas until it is out there in the public and all the trade, we call them trade rags, the trade magazines writing about it and these companies giving it to the dealers and the auto repair shops to add it and everybody's on board. I wouldn't be doing that because you can do damage. That gas is going through a lot of parts and pieces in your engine, and if it's not supposed to be there, you could be doing more damage than saving a little bit in your gas.
And if memory serves, isn't acetone highly volatile? Combustion is bad, things could happen.
Okay, then.
Okay, Brandon, thanks very much. Good luck. Let's see if we can get, this is Maggie. Maggie's on the line with us from Chicago.
Hi. I was wondering if your expert could explain if there's something inherently that causes lower mileage with convertibles versus non-convertibles, and if she could make suggestions for minimizing the impact.
I think that's a question of drag again, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's a good question. Convertibles are all about fun. So you have to weigh, you know, what is it that you want to be doing? On a beautiful sunny day, nothing is finer than cruising down the road in your convertible. And yes, it is going to cost more in gas mileage, but it's a really fun thing to do. So it's all about the aerodynamics and the drag of the car and how they're engineered. So I would say, you know, just enjoy it. You're not going to be driving with your convertible down every day unless you live out in California, but you know, you have to weigh what's more important to you at the moment.
Oh, you'll look great, Maggie, and it'll feel great.
So putting the top up, will that give you better gas mileage then?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But fewer dates.
I'm sorry?
Never mind. Maggie,
fewer
thank
dates?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Joining us now is Philip Reed. He is the consumer advice editor for Edmunds.com, and he joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil.
And I know that one of the things that you guys set out to do was to actually road test some of these assumptions that we've been talking about. First of all, tell us about the test a little bit. You had a 55-mile loop?
Yes. A couple of summers ago when gas prices started to spike up, of course, we were writing about this, we were researching it, and you see the same tips offered over and over again. And it began to occur to me that these tips could be wildly outdated and very inaccurate. Mm. Not only that, but so many of these things were sort of presented as having equal weight, which they certainly do not. So we put together a list, and a friend and I from Edmunds went to an area near Death Valley in California where there was a loop, which was about 55 miles. It's used by a lot of the car testing companies, and we knew we could drive there, you know, legally, of course, but almost any way we wanted to. So we decided to put the tips to the test.
Mm-hmm. And this were under real-world conditions, not in a laboratory somewhere on some sort of conveyor belt. And I think the first thing you found, again, and I think you would agree with Amy Matinat about this, the best way to save gas is change your driving behavior.
Yes, and it's funny because people are looking for things to put into their gas tank, magnets to connect to their intake manifolds, and all sorts of kind of whiz-bang stuff, and yet all of those things, if they existed and worked, you know, would cost money. What we're talking about here, both Amy and I, are ways, freeways, to save money, and we're talking about not just pennies, but dollars.
Mm-hmm. But you have to change your behavior, and your number one recommendation, I think, is the same as Amy's. Aggressive driving versus moderate driving can save you a bundle.
Yes, well, Amy talked about higher cruising speeds on the highway. Mm-hmm. What we actually talked about was something which involved more sort of urban pattern driving, which is we compared aggressive driving to moderate driving. Notice I don't say slow. Nobody wants to drive slow, just moderate. And we found that between those two different driving styles, there was up to a 37% difference and an average difference over the four cars that we tested of 31%. So this far and away was the biggest and the single most important thing to do first before you look anyplace else for savings.
And on the highway, you agreed with Amy, if you've got cruise control, use it.
Cruise control, we were surprised at how much that improved our fuel economy. What we found was up to 14% and with an average saving of 7%. Additionally, I mean, you also have to figure the stress on the driver. Why not put it in cruise if you're on a long trip and listen to NPR?
There's a fine suggestion for you. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Eric. Eric with us from Arkansas.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to call and say in the gas savings, we're starting something up here in Arkansas, which is kind of forming a community to foster the ideas on saving and primarily, you know, reducing your driving period and just making initiative in August to do it to an extreme and then trying to carry those habits beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to see what they thought about forming a community, and that way it's just easier to share the ideas and promote them.
Well, I think that comes under Amy Matinat, your theory of the best way to save gas is to park the car, but as you also pointed out, people do want to drive.
People do want to drive, but, you know, summer is coming, and if you can walk or ride a bike, that's a great idea. You know, think about carpooling because it cuts your fuel cost in half right away.
And there are other solutions. There's generally a bus that runs nearby, and you can take that.
There is public transportation.
All right. Eric, thanks very much for the call, and good luck with your efforts.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get this will be Kevin. Kevin with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
I remember reading an article a couple of years ago about how much gasoline is wasted because people don't either have missing gas caps or don't have their gas caps screwed on properly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious if there's any, whether that's something that's worth looking at.
Philip Reed, was this something you tested?
Well, we didn't test it, but this kind of falls under the heading of, older cars used to have gas caps that were easy to drop on the ground to have them fall off. Modern cars, for which we do a lot of driving, we drive all current cars, generally will have a tether connected to the gas cap. Furthermore, it instructs you very clearly to tighten the gas cap until it clicks at least, three times. And if you don't do that, you actually run a greater risk, which is that the check engine light will come on. And in some cases, you need to go to a dealership to have them reset that. So there's all kinds of reasons for tightening the gas cap. If you do have an older car, it could be a fuel economy measure, but it needs to be one of the really kind of older models that are out there.
Kevin, thanks very much for the call. We'll be back with more of your questions and your emails, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, Amy Matinat of Ask Patty, and Philip Reed of Edmonds will join us again. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Gas prices are at record highs, so we're giving you the best tips and tricks to put off that moment when the gas light comes on in your car. We've got the real scoop on making fuel last as much as possible. Our guests are Amy Matinat, is an automotive expert for AskPatty.com, author of How to Buy a Great Used Car. Philip Reed is with us as well. He's the consumer advice editor for Edmunds.com. Of course, we want to hear what you've tried and what works. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And coming up, we've got another Amy to ask. If you want to send us an email for our prom edition email challenge, what was your prom theme? Think. It's talk@npr.org. Let's get some emails on the line. This is Susie from Rochester, New York. Is it true that closely tailgating a semi-truck will improve the tailgater's gas mileage? My friend and I tailgated a semi all the way through Iowa in a Volkswagen Beetle one time, and we swore we improved our gas mileage. Amy Matinat, this is drafting. NASCAR drivers do it all the time.
They do. My only caution would be that it is a big, giant truck, and if it had to slam on its brakes for any reason, you might end up spending a lot more money than you would on gas. So I don't know if I would recommend that as a way to save some money on gas.
Let's see if we can get this is Patrick. Patrick's with us on the line from Pennsylvania.
Hi, yes, I was wondering about the use of nitrogen filling your tires. I see that in a lot of dealerships now. They're offering that.
Either of you have any word on nitrogen for tires?
Well, we haven't tested it yet, but we have definitely heard about this. And my feeling is that when you talk about gas saving, you have to ask how much. And if their response is 1% or 2%, this is going to be something that's very hard for you to actually feel, to test, to document. It's good, and it's good to do it, but in this particular case, the nitrogen thing seems a little bit more like a gimmick than anything else, so I don't think it's worth spending a lot of money to do it, because anything you have to spend money on will have a payback period. So how long will it take you to recoup the cost in fuel savings?
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think that is wise advice, if you're going to try anything, document it. Start keeping track of your mileage, how much you pay for gas, and when you enter it and all that sort of stuff, so you can test to see if any of this has an effect on your gas mileage.
Neil, I kind of wanted to make a point, which is most people have no idea what kind of fuel economy they should be getting. And if they went to a car website, they could find out what the EPA estimates their mileage should be, which is quite a bit inaccurate. If they look at the two numbers, of course, the highway and the city, they would actually be doing well if they got the city mileage. So if we'll say that if it's like 28 and 23, if they were able to get 23, they'd be doing pretty well, because the EPA mileage is actually overly optimistic about what they could get. But at least it will give them a benchmark so they can begin to have a more intelligent idea of what is good and what is poor gas mileage.
Okay, Patrick, thanks very much. Here's an email from Bob. Will switching to platinum or iridium spark plugs from copper help your mileage? Amy, I know you've written about spark plugs and maintenance.
Different cars need different parts and pieces. So if your car, the platinum spark plug is usually for cars that they change the spark plugs every 60,000 mile versus every 30,000. So you don't want to be putting a platinum spark plug in a car that doesn't call for it. You have to remember that these cars were engineered with the different parts and pieces in it, so that particular vehicle is going to run most efficiently. And if you go putting things in it that it didn't call for, you may again be doing damage. So I would suggest you talk to your mechanic about this and let his professional knowledge guide you if that's going to work for your car. Mm-hmm. So there is no generic answer to that one.
Okay. Let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn's with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi. I have a couple of things. A couple of years ago, I drove from Pennsylvania to South Carolina in my 92 Accord. And just for an experiment, I set the cruise control at 60 miles an hour going down Interstate 95. I usually get 27 miles per gallon in this car, but I got 44.
Wow.
Since then, I've bought a hybrid, Honda hybrid, the little two-seat Insight. And when I bought it, there were no manuals available. I bought the automatic, and it's rated for 57, but I get close to 60 miles all my lifetime, but I have since learned how to drive it, and I average 60 to 66 miles per gallon.
That's a beautiful thing.
That sounds great.
I love it. I drive 6,000 miles a month.
So, but it does suggest, even the old 92 car, that if you drive it right, you can get awfully good gas mileage.
I actually love that car. I wish I had kept it because it was very comfortable.
All right. Thanks very much, Marilyn.
Thank you.
So long. Let's see if we can. Here's an email from Brian in San Antonio, Texas. I recently saw an episode of the ever-awesome show Mythbusters, where they tested the myth of lowering your windows versus driving with the AC on. They proved that driving with your windows down can have a substantial impact on increasing your miles per gallon. And Philip Reed, I know this is something you tested.
Yeah, we did. We did a similar test, and of course, it kind of comes down to the speed at which you're driving. We tested it at highway speed, so we had the windows down and the air conditioner off, then the windows up and the air conditioner on, and we found that there was no measurable difference between these two things because two things. First of all, modern cars have more efficient air conditioning units, and secondly, modern cars are also more aerodynamic. So the two have kind of canceled themselves out, at least at highway speed. We had one vehicle that also had a sunroof, and we opened the sunroof as well as all the windows, and then the fuel mileage did begin to go down so that we knew that we were really measuring differences. But around town, if there's no aerodynamic effect, then having the air conditioner on will cut your fuel economy. So if that's something that you want to do, it may not be worth the price to everybody, and the difference will probably be 2 or 3% at the very most.
Mm-hmm. And you may have to spend the difference in bottled water just to keep your hydration
exactly.
up.
Yes.
Right? Let's see.
Can I ask you a question about the air conditioning? Did you do any tests about when you go up the hill? I've read that if you're using your air conditioning on the highway, if you turn it off when you're going up a steep hill, then you're going to get better fuel economy, and then you can turn it back on once you're done going up the hill.
Well, this is quite true, because I know on the way to Las Vegas, they have inclines that are 16 miles long, and they warn you to turn off your air conditioner, particularly if you're pulling a trailer. So there is a measurable drag on the car's engine. But when you have these two factors kind of working against each other, aerodynamics versus air conditioning, they kind of cancel each other out, at least in modern cars, because modern cars are so much more aerodynamic than the things I grew up driving.
Mm-hmm. I should also note, Philip Reed does note an exception to the cruise control advice. If you live in very mountainous terrain, you have to watch it because it'll be downshifting all the time, and that can run you some fuel. Anyway, right. Ben is on the line with us. Ben in San Antonio.
Hi. I had a comment about the savings on gas mileage with an air filter I purchased for a 97 Ford Ranger truck. I've had it for 10 years now, and the brand is K&N air filter. And I went from 14.7 miles a gallon to 20.2 miles a gallon just by changing out the filter. And I've done a few things to my truck. I've always kept tabs on the mileage. I noticed a decrease when I went from a 14-inch wheel to a 15-inch wheel. Incidentally, it also changed the...
One question at a time here. Ben.
Why don't you weigh in on that, Philip? Yeah, you know, this. It's interesting because I was talking to some guys at Edmunds. There's this huge pool of knowledge there. And I said, are there any gizmos, anything that anybody knows about? And they actually named that air filter that this gentleman was talking about.
We also got an email from Sarah in Lawrence, Kansas, about K&N's high-flow air filter.
And it makes sense to some degree. I know I went to a seminar on turbochargers, which is actually a fan that blows extra air into the engine. And they made the point, which I thought was very interesting, which is that the car's fuel is not just gasoline. It's gasoline mixed with oxygen or the air. So essentially, the more air and the freer flow of the air going into the engine, the better the engine will perform, and then the fuel economy will improve. So this gentleman experienced a huge jump in fuel economy. That seemed very high, but, you know, it's good to hear that. It's nice to think that there might be something out there that could do that.
And Amy, Matt and Nat, from what you've written, it might just be that the, or at least part of it, from the fact that he put in a clean air filter.
Absolutely. The air filters get clogged with dust and dirt and bugs, and we've even had people come into the shop that had mouse nests in their air filter. So it's one of those things you want to check all the time, and there is no average amount of time that your car can keep its air filter clean. It all depends on where you live. So you want to keep a good eye on that air filter, because just changing that air filter makes a huge difference. Because like Philip was saying, you need air and fuel. And you don't want dirty air going into your engine, because you can also do engine damage. And you could save up to $100 a year if you have a clean air filter in your car all the time. It's a very simple thing to do with, you know, giant savings.
Ben, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. It's also a lifetime filter. So $20 more, you never have to change it again. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get... we have a call from Germany. Lee is on the line. Lee calling us from Germany. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
Been over in Germany on the land of the unrestricted speed limit, which is nice, but not very good with fuel economy. But what the Europeans have done is most of their vehicles, due to government taxation, have half of them are diesels, small, clean diesels, which use about 30% less fuel than a comparable gasoline engine.
Just by comparison, can you do a quick translation for us and give us the price per gallon of fuel, gasoline, regular gasoline there in Germany?
I just put mid-grade fuel in my vehicle, and it's Euro 41 a liter, which in gallons, about $8 a gallon.
And we're complaining here.
$8 a gallon.
Yeah. What about diesel, Philip Reed?
Diesel is, I think, one of the most overlooked technologies. Diesel got a bad rap in this country back in the 80s, and it virtually disappeared because states like mine, California, passed such strong air quality controls. And however, what people don't know is that there's going to be an enormous wave of diesels which will begin arriving perhaps as early as next year. There was a major breakthrough in the construction of the diesel engine, which makes it clean in all states. And it's interesting to note that in Europe, that nearly 50% of the vehicles run on diesel. In this country, it's less than 5%. So this could be a huge breakthrough. Not only that, but biodiesel, the production of biodiesel, makes a lot more sense even than E85.
And besides, you get to go to the fun part of the gas station way in the back with the
and
truckers.
Feel like a trucker. Yeah,
exactly. Lee, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you. Good evening.
So long. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. How about an email? This is from Lex. My dad always insisted that manual or straight shift cars get much better gas mileage than automatics. Is this still true, or has technology evened out the gas mileage difference over the years? Amy, what do you think?
I think that the technology that the cars have gone through have kind of evened it out. The automatic cars just shift better, and I don't think it's as much of an issue as it was, you know, back, say, 10, 15 years ago even.
Mm-hmm. And, Philip, I know that you make this point. Technology has improved a lot of things so that, you know, some of these things you learned from your father and your grandfather might not be so true anymore.
That's absolutely right, particularly in the case of, for example, cars have gone from carbureted cars to fuel-injected cars, and the fuel injection system is so much more efficient than it was before. And one of the problems we almost never have, although maybe Amy will correct me if this isn't true in Vermont, but cold starting. I mean, when I was growing up driving cars in New England, you didn't know if the car was going to start or not. So naturally, you didn't really want to shut it down if you were stopping briefly. But these days, they will start back up. So it makes a lot of sense to shut off your car if you don't need it and if you're not going anywhere.
Amy?
In Vermont, I'm not finding that the cars aren't starting when you close them down. I think that there's still that myth of not warming your car up in the morning, that cars have, the technology has come so that you don't have to get your car started. But it gets so cold up here. I mean, we're talking 10 to 30 below zero. So I have to admit, I'm still one of those people who runs out in the morning and starts their car, sticks on the defrost, and runs back in and has a cup of tea before I go to work, just so I can see where I'm going.
Yeah. Right. We're talking with Amy Matinat of AskPatty.com and with Philip Reed of Edmunds.com. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Bill on the line. Bill's with us from New Hampshire, where, of course, it's much warmer than it is in Vermont. Bill, you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks for the show. I had a question about pickup trucks. Removing the tailgate? Is not removing the tailgate or leaving it up or leaving it down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had an email from Rob about this. I live in pickup country. Many people leave their tailgate open or remove them in order to get better mileage. I've heard this is a myth, and I guess getting back to the question of aerodynamics, Amy.
I don't really have an answer for that one. I'd be curious, Philip, did you test that?
We didn't, but we might put it on the list. But I was just talking to an engineer this morning who talked about when you have a flat object obstructing wind, it's actually much more, produces much more drag than, we'll say, like a box of a similar size. So there is a lot of drag behind that. So theoretically, it's there is some validity to it. Again, how much? I would just encourage you to try it both ways and see what you get.
Well, I have tried it, and I feel like there's less drag without the tailgate. Mm-hmm. I watched that show, Mythbusters, and they said it creates a vortex with the tailgate up, and that kind of gives it more of an aerodynamic flow of air.
Uh-huh.
But it's noticeable to me when I take the tailgate off or lay it down that there's a noticeable reduction in drag.
Okay.
With the tailgate off or down, doesn't it sort of reduce its efficiency as a truck? I mean, you'd be scared to put anything in the back there.
Well, you know, I don't load it up all the time, so it's
just remember to put it back up if you're taking your dog out with you. Okay?
Well, he doesn't ride in the back.
Okay. Good luck.
All right, thanks.
Here's an email from Leo in Tucson. I try to minimize acceleration and braking blocks before I check how long a light has been green. If it's been green for a while, I slow down so that I catch it on its next cycle. I notice this also makes me a safer driver since it makes me pay more attention to the cars around me. After a while, without specifically trying, I get a feel for the timing of the lights. As a result, I can often cross the entire city without stopping once. I've estimated over a couple of tanks, and I believe it saves me about 10%. It used to save me 15% when I had a car with standard transmission. We've already dealt with that. But Amy Matinat, this is what you call seeing down the road.
It is. I call this driving kindly. Not only is it going to save you gas, but it also makes you a better person sharing the road with other people.
And that is probably a wise suggestion in all kinds of circumstances. Don't you agree, Philip Reed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, once you get into this and you begin to see a measurable effect, it begins to actually be quite a bit of fun. And, you know, we're hearing from callers who are giving this a lot of thought and who really care. And I think that that's good. And it's interesting because I don't think this kind of interest is being picked up and measured by, you know, so-called official sources. Hmm. And for example, I mean, right now we have this huge debate about the CAFE standards, and Detroit says if they're increased, people, you know, it's going to kill the American auto business. But I really don't believe this is true. I believe Americans are frugal, and I think that they really enjoy not wasting and finding ways to conserve.
Hmm. Well, we're getting loads of emails on this. Go to our website, npr.org/blogofthenation. There's a lot of people weighing in on this on our blog, so maybe we can develop some more tips that people can share with each other. Philip Reed, Amy Matinat, thank you both for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, too.
When we come back, we'll pin a corsage on Amy Dickinson. Yes, it's time for the prom. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Cleveland Clinic, a multi-specialty medical practice working to provide innovative treatments and help patients worldwide to face their conditions with confidence. From The Economist magazine, which tells not only what's happening around the world each week, but why. The Economist, at newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And from the Horace W. Goldsmith Foundation, supporting the Museum of Modern Art in Midtown Manhattan. Information at moma.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Imagine you've spent most of your life blind. You're comfortable, successful, don't even think about vision much anymore. Then a rare opportunity to restore your sight pops up. Would you take it? Mike May did and found that vision and sight are very different things. I'm Neil Conan, crashing through a true story of a man who dared to see. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.